are equivalent to the emissions from 400 of those 400 million of those people. So if we say, why should we do anything? What do those 400 million who are equivalent of us, what are they to say to us? Or what do they think of us? Or how could we approach them and say, you've got to be doing something, lads? And also, China and the US are starting to do something. The agreement they reached recent weeks is equivalent in scale of ambition to what the European Union has agreed. So that argument has fundamentally shifted and changed, even in the last 2 or 3 weeks. And the risk now, for those who argue delay, is that actually they will develop the economic model and the new infrastructure and the companies and the gain that will come from whoever makes this switch. China is serious about this issue because the coal they're burning is killing their people. And if you're a young Chinese kid, you have 4 grandchildren who may not have another grandchild, you are concerned about the future of that child. They are politically committed to make the change in a way that we are not. And they will end up making the machinery that we will buy in 10 or 15 years' time if we don't make the advance here now. And it's the same in the States for all their false chasing after a shale boom. They too realise they have a problem because their country is going to burn just as much as anyone else's. They will have a dust bowl in their psyche and they realise that's where they're heading unless they take action in this. And when the Americans take action, they tend to do it quickly and well. So the risk for Europe, if we follow that, why should we do anything when no one else is doing anything, is that we fall right behind and end up buying their equipment in 10 or 15 years' time. That's not where we should go. The European Union's plan, the 2030 plan, is less ambitious than the 2021. It's pulled back. But there are 2 words in it that are important, the at least. And we go into negotiations in Paris next year where those at least may come into play, where we actually may commit to do more if we get a deal. But even if we don't, and even under the current circumstances, the scale of the change is huge. We're saying 40% reduction in 2030. In the renewable side, it won't be a national system, it'll be a regional one, which may be better. I'm not fixated on a particular mechanism of getting there. But because we won't do much on the transport or on the heat side, the commission people I'm talking to are saying in electricity that means at least 40% renewables. And for those countries with high opportunity, it'll be more. Because Ireland has got said, we're not doing anything on land use, folks. And also transport saying, we're not going to do anything on transport either. Can't do it, really. So what are we going to do? The power system is the one place where we could actually do something, where we would actually have an economic gain from it. I disagree with you, Colm. I can show you how we can both make economic gain from that and make CO2 savings. I think we'll need to do it in a European Union way. I think we should be using the funding and finance that we can get from Europe to help lift our country after the crisis that we're in. I think a large part of that will should be pent on interconnection with France and with Britain. And the analysis in the Commission shows that that has a real economic benefit. It actually helps you cut down the cost. It allows you cover the basic question that people are understandably asking. How do we balance and manage the variable supply? You balance it with your neighbours. And in that trade, you save money on both sides of the border. And one other benefit for those who are interested in grid and that issue, and I can understand the concerns people have about wind farms and about grid, is that by interconnecting, you may... That's mine. I was wondering. I was wondering whose mobile phone it was. I was looking at a gentleman down there kind of with an accusing eye. It's my own. Apologies for that. One of the other benefits of that interconnection is it may reduce the amount of grid building that we have to do here. That's the analysis the Commission have done, the modelling that they're looking at, the very latest analysis. I was also pleased today to see, because grid is critical. One thing I learned in terms of how we manage this energy system, you can't do it without a grid. Both in my mind, a new distributed grid, because I think the revolution that's coming is going to be in distributed, locally owned, community owned power systems, but you do need a transmission system with it. And I think it's encouraging, and I think it's open. How we build that grid will be up to air grid, talking to this man and 2 other colleagues, as I understand, to decide what's the system we do. Some of it may be underground. As I understand today, AirGrid saying that they're looking at an underground route on the GridLink project, and they're looking at a possible route in the in the southeast, sorry, on the Grid West project and a possible route in the southeast, I'd be holding my hands and say hallelujah, because I have a sense of urgency around this project, and I would love to see it, obviously, the social acceptance and agreement and us to be able to build it. And if we can, I think that would be a huge advance and huge help in the difficulty we have. I think it may be very, very difficult to do that, as I was saying to Marion earlier on, in the drumlins that separate north and south. And finding a technical route or technical way of doing that, I don't know if they have a way of doing it. I would cheer them on if they could find one. But I think we need to be honest and open with each other in terms of that may not be the case. And have to work out, so what do we do in those circumstances? Do we say we do not build it and have an immediate or an ongoing cost in terms of this divided island that we have in electricity and the possibility of blackouts in the north? I'm just going on what I'm told. Yeah. And it's open for question. Let us, at this moment in time where we're not certain where we're changing tack, keep everything open and every option open, because it is we are in a consultation phase. Lastly, I hear a lot of people, I saw the National Competitiveness Council come out last week saying a real concern about the cost of electricity and the cost of wind subsidies. I think actually at this moment to change in the European Union, where the Union is moving towards a regional approach to electricity markets and to connecting countries, there is an opportunity absolutely for us to remove renewable subsidies on wind. We don't need it because it's the cheapest form of power. Solar may come down and go below it. But it is there are two technologies where the price is coming down, unlike no other options that we have that I know, that in the move to this zero carbon system that we have to do, in my mind. So I think we can move to a subsidies-free renewable system. The risk we have in what's happening is we are not actually being part of that initiative. We are risking just being linked with the UK in what would turn out to be the most expensive market by not actually pursuing that interconnected approach. The rest of Europe will go towards that system of an integrated regional market without subsidies for wind. We'll be stuck with the UK, which is the most subsidised electricity market in the world at the present time, for nuclear primarily. That's where we risk ending up if we're not careful and act quickly in this area. But the competitiveness, in my mind, and I was in the radio with you, Colin, a few weeks ago, and I kept going back to mentioning, you know, working with Intel and other companies. The reason I did is because I had a direct experience going into the chief executive of those companies and talking about investment decisions for the following 10, 15 years. And been able to, and these are not stupid people who are careful of their money, and they were convinced that actually, yes, this is a country where you could have a competitive market, clean energy at a fair price. And they made investment decisions in the back of it. And it's still happening. The big energy user for electricity in this country are new data centres. We don't have big smelting. We don't have big dirty industry. We have pharma and digital and medical devices as our key industrial companies. And they're still investing here in new data centres. There's a new one just about to be commissioned or about to be ordered down in Cork. They wouldn't be doing that if they didn't actually see, yeah, that's a country where you can get that balance right. And they will insist on clean power. And they will insist on a secure grid, because they're running a data centre that the whole global social network is based on. And they know they can get it here because it actually makes sense compared to other jurisdictions. Our climate helps, but also they realise that it's stable. They don't know what the price of gas is in 10 years' time. They know what the price of wind is. It's zero, the same price it's always been, the marginal cost of the fuel of wind. So that competitiveness issue is critical, and it supports the sort of transition that I would argue that we need. Last but not least, as I said, we need a new economic model. I think more than anything else, it needs a new cooperative economic model in this country. I think we need to go back almost 100 years' foundation impulse that the new capitalist system we need has some of the values and the cooperative ideals that Plunkett brought to this country back 100 years ago. And I think the first and best place we can apply that is in the energy area. At this moment of stasis where we've stopped and we're reversing away from what we were previously committing to, in this 4 or 5 year period when we're not doing anything and where we are uncertain and we are divided and we have to actually talk and listen to each other, I think we should use this gap. We should use this pivot point to say, from now on,